Hey, good morning, Mid-Current Church, once again. My name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here, and we are just thrilled, honestly, so pumped to have you here with us this morning. If you're listening on the podcast online at some other place, another time, we're glad to have you tuning in there as well. Let me just begin this morning with a little snapshot into the real life of Pastor Sten here, a little true confessions here. Sometimes the way that I respond to my kids who are 4 and 2 years old, sometimes, I'm just being real honest here, sometimes the way I respond doesn't quite qualify me for Dad of the Year. Let me give you a little a glimpse of what I'm talking about here. Inevitably, we'll be sitting down to breakfast or to dinner, or we'll just be getting things ready around that little island in our kitchen. And here's what always happens. I'm not exaggerating. You can ask my wife. I kid you not. One of the kids inevitably spills the cup of water that they have just asked for us to fill up for them. It is like clockwork. I am not joking you. Happens the same way every time. We get the water in the sippy cup, and then we reach for the lid, and they say, no, I don't need a lid. And we say, are you sure you don't need a lid? And they say, yeah, we're positive we don't need a lid. And we say, okay, we'll give you a shot. You can try it without the lid. And then without fail, within just a few minutes, what happens? The cup goes down, and the water comes spilling over the edge of the counter. And as this water makes its way toward me, keep in mind that this water, this non-staining, really non-threatening liquid, as this water makes its way towards me and threatens to dampen the edge of my sweatshirt, I sprawl back as if I've been electrocuted, and like disgust it comes fuming out of me. It's like, Lucy, I told you, be careful. That's why we use the lid, right? And she like shrivels into a little ball, and I realize, whoa, hashtag overreaction, right? And then Erica calmly and graciously steps in with a towel, and she says, it's okay, Sten, it's just water, you know? I kid you not, this is like a daily occurrence in our house. Now, I don't share these to, you know, like, put my parenting skills or lack of parenting skills under the microscope. I share this because in these moments or other, I have to admit, other similar moments like this, it's in these moments that things come out of my mouth that make me go, whoa, that's not me. Some kind of reaction spills out of me, and I wonder, wow, where did that just come from? Have you ever had any of those moments? Yeah, whether it's with your kids, or whether it's a spouse, or a boyfriend, or a girlfriend, or your best friend, or whether it's your colleagues, your boss, or a client, or it's a mother-in-law, I don't know, right? It's in these moments, it's in the heat of the moment that you have these the kind of reactions that come out of you, and they surprise you. It leaves you wondering, man, where did that just come from? You're thinking to yourself, you want others to know, that's not me. You're thinking, where in the world did that just come from? But trust me, I know what it's like to have these kind of moments, and I'm guessing that you know what it's like to have these kind of moments too. And so this morning, we're going to talk about where that comes from. Right? For all of us who have had those where did that come from kind of moment, this morning I want to talk about where that comes from. And we're going to talk about it in the last week of our series called Guardrails. Let me just really quickly here, very quickly, let me get you up to speed if you haven't been with us for this whole series. A guardrail is simply this. A guardrail is a system. It's a system that's designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. And guardrails are designed to do a couple things. They direct and they protect us, and they're meant to minimize damage. If we bump up against them, they're meant to minimize damage to us, to our vehicle, and so on. And they are placed, you might remember this, these guardrails on the roads, they're placed inside of the safety zone. Right, that they're not, you know, placed in the danger zone. They're not placed on the side of a cliff. They're not any good to us there. They're placed inside the safety zone. They're not even right on the line between what's safe and what's dangerous. They're in the safety zone, directing us and protecting us before things get really ugly. And the truth is, highways, mountain switchbacks, bridges across the country, these aren't the only places that we need guardrails. These aren't the only places we need guardrails. We need guardrails in some places in our lives too, areas of our life that matter the most. One of the first ever church leaders is a guy that we often refer to as the Apostle Paul. We've talked a little bit about him. He wrote to his own church people thousands of years ago. He wrote to his own people what has become the inspiration for this series. And he says this to them. He writes to them, "Be careful how you live then. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, for the days are evil," he writes. He says, be smart, be wise, make a plan. Why? Because while most of us don't plan to wreck our lives or to wreck our marriages or to wreck our careers or to wreck our finances, we don't plan for that, but rarely do we plan not to. And so guardrails in our lives are how we plan not to. Guardrails are meant to light up your conscience, letting you know, hey, you're getting close. You're not there yet, but you're getting close to disaster. You're getting close to some really dangerous situations. You're heading in the wrong direction. So we've talked about our need to be on guard when it comes to our friends and our associates, talked about our need for guardrails when it comes to our finances, and today we're going to talk about guarding something that I think is probably the most important thing of all, guarding your heart. Guarding your heart. Our hearts are what God actually cares most about. Right, he doesn't care about all the good things we do. He doesn't care how many old ladies we helped across the street. He doesn't really ultimately care about how many times we came and sat in church. Right, ultimately, God cares most about your heart and my heart. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today, guarding your heart. King Solomon, he was Israel's third king. If we trace back into the Old Testament times, he was Israel's third king, and he's the writer of an Old Testament book called Proverbs, and it's really just a big book, a big collection of wisdom sayings. Solomon is often considered to be one of the wisest men who ever lived, and it's in this book of Proverbs that Solomon writes this. He says, "Above all else," right? Meaning if you're going to listen to anything I have to say, he's saying, right? This is it. "Above all else, guard your heart," he writes. Right? He's saying, look, I've said a lot of important things in the book of Proverbs. He wrote other books in the Old Testament even. He said, hey, I've said a lot of things, but above all else, guard your heart. Why? Because or for everything that you do, flows from it. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows from it. So for those of us who have had those where did that come from moment, this should get our attention. I mean, this should start to kind of ring our bell a little bit, because what if everything that flowed from us, what if everything that we do flowed from something on the inside of us? What if everything that came out of us originated somewhere within us? If that were true, then guarding our heart, guarding what's on the inside, knowing what's on the inside so that we can guard what's on the inside, knowing that would be pretty important. And so we need some guardrails when it comes to our heart, because our heart is the command center. It's our command center, the thing that God cares most about. And so we need to be really clear at all times about a couple things. We need to be really clear about the condition of it and what keeps it that way. And so what I want to do is I want to fast forward then, about 1,000 years later. It's about 1,000 years after Solomon wrote about guarding your heart, the book of Proverbs. But 1,000 years later, Jesus is now picking up on the same thread. He's picking up on the same idea, and he's teaching people a really powerful, powerful lesson about the condition of our hearts And I want us to see what he's getting at this morning. So one day, Jesus, he's hanging out with his disciples, doing what it is that they do when they're together. And it was, as was always the case, there's a crowd following them. Everywhere they went, there was always a crowd following these guys. And these crowds oftentimes, most times, involved the religious leaders of the day. And they would inevitably stir up some kind of controversy, or they would kind of make some kind of accusation toward Jesus and his disciples that, you know, they weren't getting things right. They were upsetting the religious order, kind of breaking the religious rules. And nothing has changed this time around. Very same thing is happening. So let's take a look. This is written in the book of Matthew, chapter 15. It says this, "Then some of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they came to Jesus from Jerusalem, and they asked, 'Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders?'" Right? The leaders of the tradition. "Why do they break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat." Now, let me tell you what they're not concerned about here. They're not concerned about manners, right? They're not insulting the disciples' moms and dads, accusing them of not teaching their kids good manners, how to wash their hands and say please and thank you and brush their teeth before they go to bed at night. That's not what they're concerned about. As was always the case, they are hyper, hyper, hyper concerned with the religious tradition. And the religious tradition of the day, up to that point, this is just how things were up to that point. It seems a little strange to us, but the religious tradition up to that point said that in God's eyes, certain things, certain foods, certain animals, certain parts of animals were unclean, bad, dirty, off limits, don't touch it. And you would not dare jeopardize your relationship with God. You wouldn't dare offend God. You wouldn't dare jeopardize your good standing with God by eating something unclean or by touching something unclean and then, you know, eating it without having washed your hands first. Because if you were to do that, to touch or to be involved with these unclean things, if you were to do that, it would just it would just defile you to the core. Right, and so these religious leaders, they think that they got Jesus and his disciples caught. He thinks that they, you know, they got him. They're busted. They're saying, "Aha, gotcha!" Right? They're not washing their hands. They're saying like, "Ah, see, you guys aren't quite as spiritual as you thought you were." But Jesus is one step ahead of them. He actually goes on to talk to them, to confront them in a way about when their traditions really do honor God and when they don't. He knows the times in their life when following the religious tradition actually kind of puts them at odds with God. And so he's kind of calling them out. He's kind of confronting them here about this, saying, "Hey, you know, don't get this deal messed up. Don't get this screwed up here." Here's what happens next. We'll skip down to verse 10. It says this, "Jesus called the crowd to him and he said, 'Listen and understand.'" He's calling all people in. He said, "Hey, listen, understand." He says, "What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, that's what defiles them." What goes in doesn't defile you, right? Eating the wrong thing doesn't defile you, right? Touching the wrong thing, gross, maybe, doesn't defile you, right? Not washing your hands, also kind of gross, but doesn't defile you. But what comes out of your mouth, that's what has the ability to defile, as they're saying. That's what has the ability to offend. That's what has the ability to harm, to do damage. That's what has the ability to separate you from God. This might seem like a no-brainer to us, right? You know, it's like, well, it's not about what you eat. You know, it's about the stuff. This might seem like a no-brainer, but in Jesus' day, he was totally flipping the script. Right? Because for them, you know, doing all these things is what kept you good with God. So he's totally flipping the script so much that his own guys, the disciples, they needed clarification. Here's verse 15. It says, Peter asked, "Can you explain this to us?" Right? He's thinking like, "Hey, we know Jesus, we're tracking with you here, but just to make sure that, you know, we could help explain it best to other people, could you tell us what you mean?" And Jesus' response is great here. In case you think the Bible isn't fun or funny to read, here's what Jesus says, verse 16. He says, "Are you still so dull?" That's his response. He says, "Are you still so dull?" Jesus asked them. "Don't you see?" He's trying to make this just plainly clear for them. He says, "Don't you see that whatever enters the mouth, it goes into the stomach and then out of the body?" At this point, I envision the disciples like, okay, we got it, good. That's enough. You'll say no more. We're tracking with you." But Jesus goes on. He says, "But." Okay, so it's not the things that they go in. That just goes in your stomach and out your body. But the things that come out of a person's mouth, they come from the heart. And these defile them. "For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander." He says these are what defile a person. But eating with unwashed hands doesn't defile them. This is key. We have to pay attention here. The things that come out of our mouth, they come from our heart. And from our heart comes evil thoughts. But look carefully, right? Look carefully at these thoughts. They're hardly just thoughts at all. They're actions, right? Murder, the sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, lying, slander. That these are actions that actually impact other people, that actually have the ability to harm other people, to do damage to other people. So it's not what goes in. It's what comes out and what has the ability to affect people that God loves. It's that kind of stuff that defiles you. It's that kind of stuff that offends God. It's that kind of stuff that puts a wedge in your relationship with God. It's not what goes in, it's what comes out and what has the ability to affect other people that God loves. That's what matters. So let me just come at this again in another direction, right? If what harms other people is what ultimately offends God, not what goes into our mouth or into our body. If what harms other people is ultimately what offends God, and if what harms other people comes from our hearts, then we need to guard our hearts. Because what's behind our "where did that come from" moment is what's inside our heart. Right, the words that come out, the reactions that come out are evidence of the condition of our heart within. Catch that? That the words that come out of our mouth are evidence of the condition of our heart within. So what's in our heart, it eventually makes its way out. And it puts us in danger. It puts us in danger of damaging or hurting or ruining another person, a marriage, a friendship, a relationship, a career. It's the stuff that comes out that puts us in danger. So then how do we really go about guarding our heart? That's what I want to help us to try to figure out here this morning. How do we go about guarding our heart? The first part, I think, is just knowing that the real condition of our heart. Stopping long enough to ask ourselves to look and to figure out the condition of our heart. So what I want to do today is this. I want to just humbly share four things to be aware of. Four things to put on your radar. Four emotions that should get your attention. When these show up in your life, that should light up your conscience, saying, "Hey, something. I don't know what it is, but it should tell you something isn't right." It should say you're getting close to the side of the road. Right? I only bring this up because I want you to have your antennas up, to be extra cautious for when these emotions are present. Because when they are, I believe we're in danger. It's not a guarantee. It's not an every time. But when these kind of emotions are really present, I believe that we're in danger. I believe that there's the possibility that we would have a moment that we regret. One of those kind of "that's not me" moments. I believe that those kind of moments and those kind of regrets are not far away. So, four emotions are these. Those four emotions are guilt, anger, greed, and jealousy. Four emotions for us to have on our radar today. I want you and I to start paying attention to what's happening inside of us when there is internal tension in our life because of one of these four emotions. Some of us are better at this than others. You know, guys in the room are saying emotion. What's that E word? I don't know what that is all about, right? So everyone responds differently to these things. And the truth is that so many of us, guys, and this is all of us, so many of us only really pay attention when something finally breaks. We only really pay attention when something snaps. But I want us to pay attention for the moment when we start to feel one of these emotions in our life and the tension they create. Because when these fill our hearts, I think at some time, at some place, they are bound to come out. They're bound to influence what we do and what we say. Why? Because everything that we do flows from the heart. So I want to just break these down a little bit more for us so we can maybe get a little better handle on these things when they might show up in our lives. Break them down a little bit. Guilt. Guilt is this first emotion. Guilt says, I owe you. Right? Guilt says, I feel bad for what I did. I owe you something. Somebody else, maybe it's God, we're saying, I feel bad for what I did. I owe you something. Right, I owe you something to try to make this right. Right, sometimes guilt can just eat away at a person. It can never let up. It's unrelenting. It can just be torturous. It can overtake us. Right, so we got to be mindful of the times when guilt fills our heart. Then anger. Anger says, "You owe me." Right, you hurt me. You upset me. You stole something from me, and I want it back. You robbed me of money. You robbed me of peace. You robbed me of innocence. You robbed me of my reputation, and you need to make it right. Right? Some of us are driven, if we're honest, some of us are driven by anger. I mean, it's what fuels us through the day. It's what fuels us through certain relationships. Anger can just override us sometimes, so we got to be careful. Greed then. Greed says this, I owe me. Right? I deserve it. I'm entitled to it. I just want it and I can have it. Right? If we're honest, it's really easy to just fall into this kind of mentality. It's really easy to just fall in love with our stuff. Sometimes important people in our life start to feel like they're competing with our stuff. Right? Because it's so important to us. Greed can be so common, it can be so dangerous in our life. And then the fourth one is this, jealousy. Jealousy says, life owes me. Right? You know, they got the car that I always dreamed about. Right? They just took the vacation that I can't afford. They just got the promotion that I thought I should have. I've worked there longer. I've never missed a day. I've been grinding day in and day out. This isn't fair. Life isn't fair, and life owes me. Man, how many of us have been filled with those kind of moments of jealousy? Now, these four emotions left unchecked, if we're unaware, right? These four emotions left unchecked, I really believe they can silently, without us being aware of it, they can silently wreak havoc in our lives. But here's the thing, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not an expert on these four emotions and you know the interplay of them in our life, but I have learned firsthand how these emotions are indeed a warning that something isn't right. I've learned how they can be helpful in lighting up our conscience. In fact, one of the greatest lessons that I have learned in my adult life, one of the greatest lessons I have learned in my life in total, has been learning that anger, for me, I'm not an angry person, but one of the greatest lessons that I've been learning about myself, that I have learned about myself, is that anger is a warning that there is some tension somewhere else in my life. This is the greatest lesson I learned. I learned it as a part of my education in training in seminary. Part of that education in seminary training to be a pastor meant that me and my classmates, we had to do what they call clinical pastoral education. They call it CPE. And what this was is we had to work rounds as chaplains in hospitals or in nursing homes, places where there's emergency and trauma or sickness and death and these things. Part of the experience was to give us training in providing pastoral care in these kind of moments. Right? We needed some hands-on experience providing care in these kind of moments. The other part of this training was to help us discover, with the help of a licensed counselor, part of the training was to help us discover what these kind of high-stress environments did inside of us. Right? Sometimes, this isn't quite what you know they were saying, but if I put it in my own words, sometimes these high-stress moments that we walk into, they have a way of revealing our true colors, right? Our true colors kind of come out. So they wanted us to have a safe place for us to process what came out, what these kind of environments did to us, where they kind of poked and pushed and prodded on us. So part of our classwork each week we had to share a report. We had to constantly each week bring a report into class about an experience that we had had that week. And I still remember to this day when I met one-on-one then with our counselor leading the group. And as we discussed the reports that I had been sharing with class and bringing into the class, I remember to this day when my counselor asked me, she said, "Sten, are you an angry person?" And I was, all honesty, I was shocked, actually, kind of. I said, "No, I don't believe that I am." I remember asking her, "Can I ask you why you would ask me that?" And she went on to share with me that each of the experiences, right, each of the little reports that I had to bring into class, each of these involved some moment where my frustration just, you know, came, you know, bubbling out. Each report that I brought to the class contained some element of, you know, like, how could he? Or who does he think I am? Or, you know, why would she say that? Or do they think I'm stupid? And so all of a sudden it was like she held up a mirror in front of me. I went, okay. I see what you're talking about. I guess that is kind of my, you know, my default reaction in these moments. And so she did then what a good counselor does, and she pressed further into my life. And this took a while. In fact, I remember my wife and my in-laws, they were in town and they were waiting for me. And my one-hour appointment went into 2 hours and then into the next hour, right? She pressed further into my life and all of a sudden she discovered some areas of tension, unresolved tension in my life. And she said, "Ah, see?" And I said, "No, I don't see." You know, I was like, "Peter, could you explain it to me?" And she went on to explain to me this, because I didn't get it. I could see the unresolved tension, right? But I just didn't see how this tension over here, I didn't see how it related to these unrelated moments over here. And so she went on to explain to me. She said, "No, it's not a direct line connection between the two." She said it's more of a dotted line connection between the two. She said that the tension in this area over here, it meant that we were calling it my resting heart rate. That's what we called it between the two of us. She said, "This tension over here meant that my resting heart rate was actually higher than it should be." Right? When I'm just feeling good, when I'm at peace, when I wake up in the morning, because of what's happening over here, my resting heart rate was already higher than it should be. So when I experience something in these situations over here, totally unrelated, but when I experience something in these situations that should have just kind of spiked that theoretical heart rate up to like a 3 or 4, little bump, little boost. Well, she said, "You're already like starting just ground zero. You're already starting at a 5 or 6. So any little bump in emotion sends you up real quick to about an 8 or 9 right off the bat." She's saying these little spikes in emotion were meant to get my attention. And what this taught me, what she taught me, is that my emotions are trying to tell me something. Anger over here meant that something wasn't right, that my heart wasn't right over here. And when my heart and when your heart isn't right over here, whether it's anger, whether it's guilt, whether it's greed, whether it's jealousy, whether it's something else, When our heart isn't right over here, we're dangerously close to a where did that come from moment. Sometimes with more at stake than, you know, spilled water in your reaction to it, right? I'm fairly certain that I haven't done a whole lot of, you know, damage to my kids in the wake of the, you know, the great sippy cup incidents of 2018. But I just wonder where else I could have caused some real damage. I wonder where you could have caused some real damage in a where did that come from moment. And my hope and my prayer is that we could prevent moments like this from happening in our future, that we could prevent moments like this from happening in areas of our life or in relationships in our life that really do matter the most. And so if that's going to happen, if we're going to really work to prevent this kind of stuff, then we need to know that the condition of our hearts, Jesus said, it's what comes from the heart that defiles and that it offends and that has the ability to really cause damage. And so we need to guard our hearts at all times and at all costs. Right, so then I'm going to close with this. In relation to these four emotions, I want to just, again, humbly suggest kind of the second half then of guarding our heart. The first part is knowing what's there. We got to know what's in there. And we got to know when it creeps in, right? These emotions are a warning. They light up our conscience. But then how do we resolve that tension, right? I don't want to just kind of leave us there. I want to try to, you know, provide some help. So the second part of guarding our heart then is doing something in response to what it is that we discover it's in there. And I think there's a response to each of these that I think can help. And once again, I just humbly suggest these responses for us all this morning. The first response is this. The first response is confession. Where there's guilt in our life, we got to learn to confess. And I'm going to go ahead and say this. We've got to learn to confess to one another. Right? Absolutely, we confess to God, 100%, right? So many of us also, we've grown up confessing to someone we don't necessarily know behind a closed door. That's all fine and good. All I'm saying is I think that we need to start to confess to one another, maybe to the person that we hurt, but maybe just to a close, trusted friend. We got to get this stuff up and out. Let somebody in on it. I think that's what has the power, to break this grip of guilt the most. We got to learn to confess out loud to one another. Is that scary? Absolutely it is. Could there be some damage in confessing what it is that we have done? Yes, there could be some damage. But that's what guardrails are designed for. Minimal damage now to avoid colossal damage later. All right, so where there's guilt, we got to learn to confess. What about where there is anger? Where there's anger, we need forgiveness. Forgiveness is saying, you know what? You don't owe me any longer. You don't owe me any longer, and that's hard. Trust me, that's hard. Right? You might be feeling like, well, hey, if I take that route, I'm just letting them off the hook. Maybe so. But you're also letting someone else off the hook too. You. You're not bound to anger any longer. It doesn't control you. It doesn't dictate to you how you're supposed to respond in this moment or how you're supposed to respond in this relationship. You just let yourself off the hook. It can be pretty powerful. It can be pretty powerful in our life to learn to forgive more. What about greed then? Where there is greed, I think we need generosity. I heard it put like this. This is cool. I heard that someone say about generosity, that generosity is giving in ways that are big to you. I like that. Giving in ways that are big to you. Right? Writing a big to you check. Giving big to you gifts. Making big to you commitments. And you might say, well, how big is that? It's just as it sounds. It's big to you. Right, big to you might be small to me. It's fine. It's big to you. Big to you might be huge to me or huge to somebody else. And you're going, well, I don't know. It's just big to me. That's great. You don't have to worry about how it's received. You just have to be generous in ways that are big to us, right? And when you and I do this, when you give in ways that are big to you, you're telling greed, take that. Right? You're not in control anymore. Somebody need it? I just gave it to them. Right? Somebody needed help? I just wrote the check. You don't call the shots anymore, greed, right? We can protect ourselves. We can protect our hearts with generosity. Finally, we can guard our hearts with celebration. This is good, right? Where there was once jealousy in our lives, I think we have to learn to celebrate. We learn to celebrate and be grateful for what we have, and then we learn to celebrate what others have. We celebrate the trip that they just took and the relaxation they had with their family. We celebrate the promotion that they just got and what that means for their life. We got to learn to celebrate, as hard as that might be. We got to learn to celebrate the moments in their life and give thanks for the exciting moments in our own life as well. This final guardrail, it means that we have to know what's really going on inside. And we have to be willing to take immediate action, a little course correction, if something isn't right. And so the question that I'm just going to leave you with is this. How's your heart? Is everything okay in your heart? Did anyone hurt you? Did anyone break a promise to you? Are you angry at anyone? Are you clinging to anything? If it's in you, I think at some point, at some time, it will come out of you. And it could, it's not a guarantee, but it could cause some real damage. So above all else, guard your heart. Let me pray. God, we're grateful for this morning once again. And God, we kind of sang it before, and we're going to even just really briefly sing it again, God. But I want our prayer to be one that is an invitation for you, God, to help us figure out what's in our hearts, God. If we don't exactly know how to do that, if we don't exactly know what that looks like, God, would you help us? You know, God, would you shine a spotlight in our lives, in our hearts, God, in a way that you know how to do best, God, with love and with grace and with compassion, would you shine a spotlight into our hearts and our lives, God? If that's not something that we do, would you help us to figure out how we start to do that a little bit more? God, we truly want to step into the lives that you have planned for us. God, we want to have thriving relationships and thriving marriages and thriving careers and thriving kids and everything, God. And so we just ask for your help in protecting us from some of the damage that we do to ourselves sometimes, God. So would you help us to maybe most of all, God, put some guardrails up around our hearts, God. Help us to do the hard work of knowing what's there and working to correct what isn't exactly right, so that above all else, God, we can really guard our hearts. We're grateful, God, that it's our hearts that you care most about, not the things that we do or the, you know, perfect spiritual resume that we have going. God, we give you thanks that it's our heart that you care most about. And so would you walk alongside of us, God, as we seek to give ourselves more and more to you, God. Give our hearts to you in powerful ways, God. Thanks for this morning. And God, as we just close with this last song, might this be our prayer to you, God, for our hearts to be yours. We pray these things in your name. Amen.